Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Cosmic Reality Radio, simulcasting with Haggy Shack Radio.
The unknown, unknown, unknown.
Welcome to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show with Nancy Hopkins and Walt Silva. Produced by Colleen Kelly of Haggy Shack Radio, simulcasted over Cosmic Reality Radio. And welcome to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show. My name is Nancy Hopkins. It's being produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. With me is Walt Silva, and it is October 9th, 2018. Walter, are you there?
Hello there. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah, we didn't really do a sound check, but I can hear you fine. I will adjust you as you talk. Oh, my goodness. So how are you doing?
It's London here, even though I've never been here.
It's what?
It's like London, even though I've never been to London. It's been wet and muggy for like 3 straight days.
Is it cold? I think it's cold in London.
No. It's just super humid. It's not. It's like what? Maybe 60 something outside. I mean, I realized that this year. I think I mentioned it to you. You know, at the store, you know, Home Depot or Menards, when you buy the sprayer fertilizer thing, it's a plastic bottle that you attach to your garden hose, and it allows you to spray dry or wet fertilizer. Well, instead of buying fertilizer, I just bought the bottle this year, and I sprayed, I filled the bottle with Shanghai powder, and that's what I sprayed on the lawn, the front lawn, on the back lawn, and every year, the ash tree, we have a gigantic ash tree in front of the house. And every year, it's like the very first tree in the entire neighborhood to get yellow and lose all its leaves. But this year, by now, it would be completely naked. It is dropping leaves, but so far, the entire tree is green. All the leaves are green. It's not a single yellow leaf. So I think that it's loving the sunlight and the soil.
Well, how did the rest of the yard come up? Did you? I mean, you got grass and
everything is green. Everything is green.
How about your neighbors? Are they got as green as you, or is?
No, he's got an ash tree as well, but that one's getting yellow. So I think, well, we know the Shanghai has a gigantic field, so I'm not surprised that even though I just watered my lawn, the energy in the soil is affecting the next, you know, soil is all connected, isn't it? I mean, the fungus in the soil creates a network. That's how the plants communicate. So, and the little ash tree that's across the street, because the next, I don't know why, the city hall, Crystal City Hall, came around 1 year and they planted additional trees. So they planted a little ash tree, a little maple tree, one in my next door neighbor and one across the street in the house in front of them. And that, even though they're both the same age and size, that one is already completely yellow. But the one in my neighbor's next door, that one still has it's mostly green. So I'm voting Shanghai. I don't know about you.
Sorry, I had myself muted.
I
was on with Derek earlier with the Shanghai radio show, and he was giving us an update on the bees. But unlike last year, where he was really on top of everything, and when they swarmed, he captured a good portion of them. You know, this year with all the turmoil, they've had swarms. I mean, he every one of the hives swarmed, which was very unusual. At that time, there were four. One, two, three. Yeah, four of them. And he's maintained four hives all during the season. And if they swarmed, they swarmed. He didn't have the ability to capture them and increase the overall apiary, but they just were so healthy that they flew into the wild. And today he's telling us that because there's so many wild bees out there, the entire Darrington, Washington area has all of a sudden got blooms of flowers and trees and trees putting out fruit because they've been pollinated. He said that there were so many apples this year that the weight of the apples on the limbs were breaking limbs.
Wow.
Yeah, and I said to him, well, do people realize what's happened? And he's going, I don't think so. But they're all commenting on, wow, what an amazing year of... And it's because of the so many bees have been let out into the wild there. I found that really interesting.
So that means that prior to his arrival there, there was little or no insect presence to help the vegetation?
Well, that's true any place. You know, you bring in any pollinator, and I mean, like that's what they're calling the sixth extinction, is that the entire insect community, I don't know what you know, species, they're all dying off. So that, you know, it could be as, I don't know what it is. I know that in Germany, and it was like, it was quite a 14, I think, 2014, that they got a count of 76% of the biomass of insects in Germany was gone, at least in the central area that they were looking at. And then they, you know, other places started doing a count too. And I mean, it's really dangerous and very tragic. But on the other side of it, the upside is that Derek is proving that, okay, last year he could prove he could make the most incredible honey and make lots of it because he had happy bees that kept, you know. And this year, because of just circumstances, he's basically proven that if you just let them go wild, nature will begin to come back very quickly. I mean, what he got there for the season. He was in there in February, so he got there for the beginning of the season. And in that one area, he's had at least four, probably six or more spawnings. And those hives go out, if they're going out, maybe they've got, let's say, 50,000 bees are out there now starting up another hive, and then they probably swarmed. So there's a tremendous number of bees in the area compared to any other area probably in the world right now. And what was the result? There were so many apples, the tree limbs were breaking. Come on, boys and girls. And why did it happen? Shungite. I mean, this is not a...
Let them recover. I mean, you were, in other shows you've mentioned about the lack of insects. I mean, for the area where I live, I can report the opposite. I mean, I don't know. I'm not an entomologist, so I don't know spider species. I know spiders are not insects. They're arachnids, but still, I take it. Entomologists study all of these creatures. And I don't know spider species by name, but ever since I've lived here, we moved into this house in 2006, it's always toward the end of the summer. In the last few weeks of the summer, these big, huge spiders come up and they weave their cobwebs all around the house. And it's very common. You look out the window and you'll see this giant cobweb. And the spiders are big. I mean, they're larger than a garbanzo bean, their bodies. And this year is no exception. They did cobwebs all around the house, and then there's one inside the garage. And I thought to the spider, "What are you doing? You're making a cobweb inside the garage? There's really not many exits in the garage, even though I do work when I'm working there most of the time. If the temperature is nice, I'll just work with the door open. Well, if you go around looking at the cobwebs, they're chock full of insects. So these guys are not starving. Even the one inside the garage, who I thought might be starving because, well, you're indoors, you're not actually outside. Nope, her cobweb is full of insects.
May I point out that you are like, you know, shungite number two? I mean, I've heard that there's somebody else in the States that's got 8 ton of shungite coming into the country every year. But we got a lot of shungite, you and I, just in our environment, you know. So we don't – the fact that I've got a lot of insect activity, too, out there. The bees have all come back, you know. It could be because we've got so much shungite to begin with. We're not exactly the, you know, the control group when you're doing a research project, because we're all shungited out. Well, you never have enough shungite. But it was interesting to hear that, you know, it had been so noticeable so quickly. The change. So everything can happen. It can happen very quickly. But we've got to get people aware of the fact that, A, there's a problem.
Well, at least to me, it goes to prove that the planet is a living being. It's not a dead rock floating, traveling through space. Because, for example, back in the 1800s, I believe it was, when out in the... in the area of the world where Indonesia is, where you have the island of Krakatoa, where in the 1800s the volcano literally exploded. In fact, the historical records say that the cloud of dust it generated literally orbited the planet. It went around the entire planet. And they equate the explosion of it to an atomic explosion. It was so violent. The island that was so many square miles prior to the explosion was reduced to like a tiny patch of land. Everything was just wiped completely. But I remember reading in a documentary that it must have been a year or so later, surveyors went to check the area and they visited this, what was left, you know, a little patch of land. And already among the rocks, they found little spiders. You know, why would that be there when this thing was literally almost wiped off the surface of the earth? And then you have the other, I remember you commented on it, so I know that you've seen it. I posted on Facebook, I think it was last year or earlier this year, about that project that was done in Costa Rica where so many square miles of rainforest were razed because of exploitation. And then this scientist made a deal with all the orange growers to go drop all the orange fields in this barren land, and they did it. They covered I don't know how many square miles with just orange fields, and a few years later now it's coming back. The entire forest is coming back. The animals are coming back. That wouldn't happen if you were living on a dead rock. Sorry, it's alive and living. And the ignorant man doesn't realize that. You know, the greedy man who has no heart doesn't realize you're living on a living being. You're just a flea on this gigantic dog in the universe. And you're alive because it's alive.
I saw I guess it was a documentary on the space race, the space program. And actually, I saw one whole one and then part of another one. And some of the people that were being actually most of the people being interviewed were all astronauts themselves that had been to the moon. And I can't remember which one it was, but, I think it was Young up when they did, Apollo 11, when they actually landed on the moon. And somebody called him the loneliest man in the world, or the loneliest, I guess, man in the world, because he was alone in the capsule that kept revolving around the moon while his buddies were down on the moon. And he said, oh, contraire. He said, first off, NASA kept talking to him, you know, as he's making this trip around. He said, but the impact of this, I mean, some of the things they said regarding their experience, like one of them said, all of a sudden, I realized that this wasn't a sci-fi movie. This was real. I was on the moon, you know? And it was that kind of, wow, we've really done this. the smallness of humanity. You know, one of them said, if you took your thumb and you put it out in front of you, you would block out the earth. And every single thing that you would ever known, gone, because you got your thumb up in the way. He said, it makes you feel so insignificant. But at the same time, it instills you with a sense of awe at the marvelous planet. This island floating around in the expanse of space that's nothing, and you got this amazing vehicle of life just floating around and spinning around and doing its thing. And all of them indicated that, well, I can't imagine how it wouldn't have happened to you, but that everything about your life changed. And every one of them seemed to have a serenity about them and a moral compass that says, I've seen the outer edges of everything, and I know that there is some kind of a God. Not a religion, some God, some source of amazing powers that could create, you know, the moon, the earth, the stars. I mean, it's just, and we've lost that wonderment. I mean, I think that we had it when the space race was up there and everybody was, you know, behind it, and you'd hear the astronauts, you know, talking about, a lot of this they didn't come out with until later, because, you know, you didn't want to be talking crazy stuff like spirituality. And it's just an interesting time frame to think about, you know, because I think that these, every time a human being goes through a profound experience, that it feeds the collective, you know. And by that very experience of so many of these men going up there and going like, whoa, this is something, you know, that it actually did impact on a lot of us, that maybe the whole population of the planet, maybe humanity in general. But I think that that may have been a catalyst for re-looking at what it is to be Earth. And, of course, Buckminster Fuller was alive and well at that time, too, writing about Spaceship Earth. So it's it was very, very interesting to see that replayed. And you know, they were kind of crazy, Walter. Because, I mean, if you really think about what they were...
Was that before the Schumann frequency repeater or emulator?
You know, initially, well, no, by the time they were doing maybe not the Gemini, but certainly by Apollo, they understood that. Because there had been a certain amount of long term, but what we're talking about is that cosmonauts were the first ones to report it. Goodness knows if we were getting it too. But the longer they were up in space, and the Russians were pushing for long duration. They didn't, you know, beat the Americans to the moon, and so they started looking at other things like, well, we'll stay up here longer than you guys will. But when some of them came back, I actually heard it. I don't know. And we didn't have the internet thingy, but I had heard that the cosmonauts were coming back crazy. And of course, no, of course not. Oh, that's just, you know, BS. But it turned out that it was true. And what it was tied to wasn't the radiation. It was the fact that they had been disconnected from the bioelectromagnetic energy field of the planet that your brain wants to work in. And without it, you go nuts. And so now they put in all the spacecraft, it's a Schumann resonance creator. It creates the same energy field that you have on Earth. But I have to wonder, you know, are they upgrading it as the Earth is going bananas with a Schumann changing?
Well, one of your listeners, a gentleman who was in one of the radio shows, so I guess if someone wasn't on your radio show, I can say his name? Or no? Hello?
Yes, I was muted. Yes, of course you can.
Okay. Well, you had a guest in one of our shows. He's one of our listeners, and he's one of your customers. His name is Lee Borseka. He's a professional, militarily trained commercial pilot. And he was kind enough to send me a link to one of the Dan Winter shows, lectures. And finally, in this particular lecture, you know, this is a gentleman that most people might know because every 10th word, when he's talking, every 10th word he says is conjugate or phase conjugate. And you think that maybe he's missing a screw or something. But in this lecture, at least, he was sedate enough that he explained himself quite well so that I could make sense of what the heck he was saying. So at one part of the show, I think it was toward the end of the lecture, he was doing this in, I believe it must have been some kind of meeting hall. It's either a school or a college, one of these two. And they got into that conversation, the Schumann resonance thing. And he explained quite clearly that he says those people that have made the watches that produce the Schumann resonance, and he says, and you put them on, and you get this momentary high. He says, but that's it. That's all you get. You get a momentary high, because what happens is the Schumann resonance is merely a carrier that the planet uses to communicate with you, to communicate with your living being, with your energy field. So it's just a carrier, and it's the carrier carrying that data that, you know, the language that the planet uses to communicate with you. He says, but if you make it artificially with some kind of device or a watch or something, yes, you get that high because your brain is going, okay, I'm ready to receive, but there's nothing there. The device is just merely making an empty carrier. So when I read that, it made me think, when he talks about the importance of having that your space be fractal, in the sense that since everything in nature is fractal, everything follows the golden mean ratio, everything living is based on the golden mean ratio. He spoke about the importance of the space that you live in being fractal. So he brought up the point that there's a village in one of the coasts in England where I don't remember where he actually went there, or he researched them from where he was. For some reason, the villagers live over the 100-year mark. Some were 110, someone lived 120. And he wondered, what is it about these people that makes them such long longevity, and considering that their diet is really not that exceptional, other than the fact that they eat what they fish off out of the sea. And what he discovered was they live on these houses that are near the, you can see the water from where the houses are located. But here's the thing, all the houses are made of hemp, so they have a specific vibration, a special frequency. They are made of a natural material. And he says, and also, come the evening time, you get this ionized fog that comes in from the ocean, and it interacts with the house itself. So he says, so these people are living in a highly energized fractal space. So it's like being in the energy of life itself, and that's why they live such long lives. So I connected the two together, at least in my own awareness. And I mentioned to Libor, this makes me think that my Shanghai resonator, because it's resonating with a 60 hertz frequency and it's equipped with Shanghai, it's using the 60 hertz frequency as a carrier for the Shanghai essence and energy. Therefore, your living space is now a fractal space. And Libor responded, he says, I like the way you think. Because he bought one of those. So I thought that was interesting that, you know, the Schumann resonance by itself is just a carrier. It's the information that's inside that's critical. And the same, and thus we have that with the Shanghai, because the Shanghai is natural. Natural fullerenes come from space. They are full of all that energy and information from the cosmos, as opposed to the laboratory made stuff that's just an empty bottle. You have an empty bottle and you fill it with whatever you want to fill it, you know, liquids, powders, but it's still an empty bottle. So.
I know. I, you know, it's so obvious to me regarding the C60 that there's not the energy of Mother Earth, or because it's just laying in Mother Earth, laying in the soil there. You're connected to all the energies, and we know that that Shungite is finite power and an infinite, I mean, infinite power in a finite object. You know, all the energies that you would need. Now, what's the carrier wave bringing to people? It's bringing, I would assume, all of the energies contained within the earth, so that you would use what you need at the time that you need it. Because in different areas of the world, the measurements for the Schumann signal is different. And I think it's because of the geological structures that they have right in that area.
Correct. The distance from the poles, everything has an effect. You know, altitude, longitude, latitude, altitude on the surface, you know, all of these things play a role. So,
but that's just for the carrier frequency itself. But mm-hmm. I think that you know, everything that you would need to be healthy is there, that your energy body can just draw on. As far as the thing that happens to the astronauts or cosmonauts, that would just be, to me, an electromagnetic circuit that's misfiring. You know, if you don't have that carrier wave, that carrier wave is probably what we call the grounding wave, you know, and that's why you mm-hmm. have this electromagnetic ground. If you become disconnected in a ground, in electromagnetic, if you lose ground in an electromagnetic system, you're going to have a really shitty system because it's not going to work. So you have to have that from a standpoint of just mechanics. Electromagnetic mechanics.
And I think that if you're a space traveler, I don't see why not, if you went to another world and you were aware enough to connect to the sentience of that world and request that grounding connection. Now it's up to that world whether it wants you or not, because that's one of the things that Drumbala Melchizedek was very clear, and I mentioned it in several shows, that if the planet wants you and needs you, you could be smack in the middle of a major earthquake and you're not going to get a scratch. But if you're somebody the planet does not want or need, you could be in an underground bunker surrounded by miles of concrete and still something will happen that will kill you because the planet doesn't want you. And that could be, you know, another example. And I've heard many people speak of, not only Andrew Varsis, but other people speak of it. The islands of Hawaii appear to have, you know, their own resident deity or sentience. And not everybody that wants to live in Hawaii can live in Hawaii. There's this ongoing thing that the islands have to accept you. If they don't accept you, it doesn't matter if you have all the money in the world. You will not be able to live there. You'll get sick or something will happen that'll force you to leave. And I've been hearing this for years. I don't know if you've heard anything similar to that. And they keep insisting is that they have the islands have their own resident deity, and it's very finicky about who it lets live there. So
Pele,
it's a living planet.
Pele. Well, that, you know, you're bringing in the thing that I think that is the missing, what the cabal, the dark side, whoever it is out there, the evil doers. You know, I mean, really evil people. What they missed, and that's that there is a sentience, that you cannot have creation without a consciousness. A creator consciousness is Gaia, where she's a creator consciousness that just starts to build, manifest world and all of the various aspects of it. They bet there was no Gaia, that it was some kind of, again, mechanical relationship of molecules and atoms and you know, never thinking in terms of energy and consciousness and what's all that about.
Yeah.
And that,
oh, by the,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but I don't know if you want me to read it in the second half, but according to the Fulford report, it appears that it's happening. You know, what's supposed to happen is this thing is really happening.
Yeah, let's do that, because I always like to start out with Ben. He always makes me think about things. But as far as this subject, it mm-hmm. really runs directly into transhumanism. And so, you know, let's do Fulford, and then let's talk a little bit about this transhumanism thing, because it's creepy.
Okay, let's go. So the should we do a sound check with the people in the chat room? Are they hearing us okay, or are they hearing like half a dozen voices? I guess somebody would have said something, right? If they weren't hearing us. Okay. The title of the report begins with, "The world is about to learn about Hazarian mafia crimes, horrific beyond imagination." And he produces a series of photos here and a link that I absolutely refuse to click on, so I'm going to start reading. "The Hazarian mafia has been torturing, murdering, and cannibalizing children on a horrific scale. And the world is about to find out as military tribunals begin. Some very disturbing images and testimonies sent by the New York Police Department and the CIA show just how evil the Hazarian Mafia really is. These people are beyond truth and reconciliation and do not deserve even a quick death. Let us start with FBI statistics on missing children in the U.S. so that skeptics can prevent the sheer evil of these deeds from shutting their minds. In 2015, 442,032 juveniles went missing. Of these, 42,032 were not found." And he gives a link here for that information. "By comparison, in the same year in Japan, 17,971 children, the equivalent of 44,000 in the U.S. when adjusted for population difference, went missing, and close to 99% of these children were found. The photograph below, sent by the CIA, are linked to CNN star and FRB Vanderbilt heir Anderson Cooper, and may give a hint as to what happened to at least some of these children. Even more gruesome is the video still shot linked below that was sent to the CIA via courier by the New York Police Department. It shows a young girl whose face was allegedly peeled off by Hillary Clinton in a satanic ritual. Be warned, it is graphic, and I stopped watching shortly after the 2-minute mark." So, no, I'm not clicking on that, sorry. "Now I begin to understand the look of sheer horror on the face of George Soros when I asked him a question at a press conference about the families that owned the Federal Reserve Board. He had probably seen some of this sort of stuff firsthand. The prosecution of these criminals is set to finally start now in the U.S. military government backing President Donald Trump has secured a majority on the Supreme Court with the confirmation of Justice Brett Kavanaugh," Pentagon sources say. "Attorney General Jeff Sessions has already met with the real special prosecutor, U.S. Attorney John Huber, in Utah, so that the 57,000 indictments may be unsealed," the sources explain. "The seating of Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court should unleash declassification of FISA." You know what those letters stand for? FISA, F-I-S-A?
No, I was hoping you
okay. did. Oh, okay. And federal information... something
federal intelligence.
Freedom of Information Act, isn't it? Freedom of Information.
FISA.
Is it that?
I think. Yes. Let me look it up. FISA, right?
FISA. Uh huh.
Okay, you talk. I'll look.
Okay, so the seating of Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court should unleash declassification of FISA and other documents, as well as military tribunals, the sources say. Furthermore, they add, the Senate unanimously approved a resolution calling for declassification of 9/11 documents, so the stage is set to take down the Zionists and the deep state. Another aspect to starting the prosecution of these criminals is the ongoing U.S./Russian military action against the rogue state of Israel, the sources say. In particular, Russian electronic warfare is aimed not just to impose a no-fly zone over Israel, but to stop ICBMs and other missiles from being launched, rendering the sanction option obsolete and making denuking the only feasible option. the Pentagon sources explained. In other words, Israel can no longer use any nuclear blackmail to protect the Satanists in the U.S. Also, Vatican P2 sources confirmed that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is a Satanist mass murderer who needs to be either arrested or killed as soon as possible. The U.S. and Russia are considering imposing a sea and land blockade on Israel to force that state to stop its criminal activities. They continue. The sources sent this photo with the explanation that even the White House has declared Red October. And I'm going to share this with people in the chat, if you don't mind. Okay. Where are you, chat? Okay, here we go. Chats. Okay. Mm-hmm. And there's the photo for the chatters. The sources sent this photo with the explanation that even the White House has declared Red October. The Pentagon sources also said, it appears that the cabal may have lost a submarine or underwater base and retaliated by sending ricin to Secretary of Defense James Mattis and Naval Chief John Richardson. What the Pentagon sources were referring to was the destruction of a Clinton escape residence with entourage, including an underground bunker built to store the gold, according to CIA sources in Indonesia. Remember in last week's article, he spoke about commandos that invaded what appeared to be in a villa, and then they found hundreds of millions of dollars in an underground vault in the basement. I guess you're muted. Well, he has
no. I'm
to
trying
say.
To remember.
that was in the previous report.
Okay,
but it turns out I'm going to keep reading because it turns out they had estimated something like around 200 something millions of dollars. It turns out that it was actually more. Okay, so he says what the Pentagon sources were referring to was the destruction of a Clinton escape residence with entourage, including an underground bunker built to store the gold, according to CIA sources in Indonesia. This destruction is appearing in the news as the recent tsunami that hit Indonesia, which even experts quoted by the Washington Post note it was not a straightforward event, said Adam Schutzer, principal investigator at the Singapore-based Earth Observatory. The earthquake was beyond the bounds of the warning systems available. Here's the real explanation, according to the CIA. Clinton was in control of the gold coming out of the Grasberg mine / Freeport. The Clinton Foundation / Clinton Global Initiative, with an office in Papua, was the vehicle for laundering the cash obtained from the sale of the undeclared gold. In parentheses, a lot of it was off-ledger gold. Clinton has done business with certain factions of the Indonesian military for years, those who control access there. The Chinese had confirmed all of this and knew that the only way was to flood it out. The tsunami was triggered by the Chinese. The tsunami was not possible, scientifically that is. It was all carefully done and then blamed on faulty technology and a weird fault slip angle. But that fault slip angle was weird, if you ask geologists, because it wasn't natural. Communication systems can be manipulated. That's why it failed to show the third tsunami. That tsunami warning system has worked ever since they got it developed after the 2004 Christmas disaster. There are non-visible lasers. They have no color in the visible spectrum. This goes beyond the DEU, directed energy weapons. Beyond the EU is non-visible laser. The Chinese military are smart. This cannot be detected. They took DEU technology and made it better. This was a hit, a direct hit from a Chinese non-visible laser satellite weapon. It took out the Clinton escape residence, the entourage living there, and the underground bunker. Unfortunately, there was serious collateral damage. The CIA sources say that close to $500 million in cash, not $270 million as was reported last week, was seized by special forces in the raid on that Clinton hideout before it was destroyed. A Google Earth screenshot of the destroyed complex is below. So I'm going to save that. And I'm going to share it with the folks in chat. Here we go. Okay. Okay, Google Earth screenshot of the destroyed complex is below, and that's the photo I've put on the chat. The money was divided between a certain group of top-level white-hat Indonesian government officials, one of them being Vice President Yusuf Kalla, and Trump's inner circle, military included, the sources say. So now we know why the generals got Ryzen mailed to them. We have also been allowed to give our readers more information on one of our CIA sources. He was in charge of the agency's clandestine services in Jakarta, working out of the U.S. Embassy from 1965 to 1985. When he was there, he told me there were only 20 American citizens permanently living in Jakarta. All of them worked at the embassy under diplomatic cover. He told me, and this is a quote, "Our team escorted Bung Karno, President Sukarno, out of power, and we installed Suharto into power. And yes, his team, as well as Langley headquarters and another alphabet agencies, were involved in assisting Suharto in the killing of up to 1 million Indonesian Chinese that were labeled PKI, Partai Komunis Indonesia. This was well-planned takedown of all Suharto's so-called opposition. It was planned with the Australian government as well. They were heavily involved in this attempted genocide. This was also about the time that Suharto handed control of Freeport to the agency. There is so much more to this, but enough for now." I asked the cowboy why he did this. His answer, "It was my job. I worked for the U.S. government. You did not ask questions back then. If you did, you disappeared." He did tell me that he personally was involved in sending 2 cargo ships of rice to Kalimantan, as they had no food and the Dayaks and Malays were dying from starvation during this crisis, as all rice shipments from Jakarta were stopped. He did this with private personnel. And to add more, yes, he was close to the Bush senior cartel back in the day. He was part of the old guard. Not many left now. On a final note, our source, who is connected to the secret bases in Antarctica, he is a relative of Admiral Richard Byrd of Antarctic exploration fame, got back to us to insist that something really weird was happening there, saying the quote below from last week was true. Remember, I read a quote saying that Antarctica was opening up a wormhole and there were all these weird things happening down there?
Right.
Which reminded me of that weird dream that we shared with Gene, remember about the cube in Antarctica? Couldn't help but remember that. So I don't know if you want me to read that again. I read it last week. So
no, read it again. Read it again.
Okay. The quoted paragraph states, "Antarctica is opening up a wormhole. Yes, there is an opening to other dimensions down there. Due to the extremely high magnetic shifts going on in and near Antarctica, it's literally tearing a new fabric in the dimensional field. This is the reason why all those government leaders went down there. This is why they shut off Antarctica to the public and so forth. The public only gets 5% of the story, and now you have the other side." That's the end of the quote. This source noted that even reputable publications like Scientific America were reporting there's something mysterious coming up from the frozen ground in Antarctica. And it could break physics as we know it. He provides this link, which I'm putting in on the chat for someone who might want to read it. "We will try again to visit Antarctica this southern summer and report directly to our readers what is really going on there. If there really is an anomaly like a wormhole opening up there, the entire population of the planet should be told and shown proof, not just a few leaders. Vincenzo Mazzara, a cavalier of the Teutonic Knights and a senior member of the Vatican P2 Freemason Lodge, says preparations are being made for humanity to start building a fleet of arc ships and expanding out into the universe. As usual, my reaction to this sort of stuff is to believe it when I see it. For now, the White Dragon Society is working towards getting multi-trillion-dollar funding for an Earth-based massive campaign to end poverty and stop environmental destruction. End the period. So there you have it. I wish Dolly, since she can get information from the other side, that she would tell us if any of this is, or maybe 10% of it is real, or 20%
they of it. They just tell us. No, they can't tell us. They can't tell us. They're always
they can't
telling
tell
us.
You.
They're always telling us they can't tell us. Yeah. It's like cheating, you know?
It's like a need-to-know basis. You don't need to know, guys. Okay, then
less.
Why are you letting somebody write about it if we don't need to know?
Well, I have to wonder if this Antarctic, I'm trying to think of the time frame. It must have been early 17 or late 16 where we were involved with the Ark of Gabriel.
Oh, yeah.
And we know that the Ark of Gabriel was something they discovered in Mecca that was transported by Russian ships to Antarctica. And delivered there. And then right after that, the Pope and Archbishop Kirill of Russia, Orthodox Catholic Church, they meet in Cuba, which Walt and I covered, and we're going like, this doesn't make sense at all. And it's some kind of another story happening. And we were lucky enough to hear that the story was the Pope had some kind of information that Archbishop Kirill needed regarding, I suppose, I'm Walt trying to keep the Ark of Gabriel from going critical.
I apologize. I was reading a fragment here, but I think you mentioned that the Ark is what was dug up from that giant mosque where they had the giant crane that collapsed and killed people.
Yeah.
Wasn't that where it was retrieved from there, from Mecca?
Yeah, it was underground.
Yeah.
They thought that the crane had been hit by lightning. It was actually hit from the plasma blast that came from underground. When some workers found it, and as soon as they interacted with it, it set off a blast. Very reminiscent of the Ark of the Covenant stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you weren't smart to handle it, it'd kill you because it set off to me, what it was sounded like a plasma blast. And this one knocked down the crane, causing then not only a number of deaths there, but then there was a stampede and hundreds died. Of course, this all goes back to the fact that 5 days before that, we had freed the djinn.
Yeah.
That we're protecting the whole area. Oh, yeah, let's just free the djinn, you know? And then 5 days later, the crane falls. There's the Ark of the Gabriel is discovered. They take it by Russian fleet to Antarctica. And then Kirill goes down there with information in the form of secret information from the Vatican to be able to, I don't know, put some Catholic curse on it or, you know, try to control it. I don't know what that was about. But then Jean got sucked into it because you and Jean were having a conversation about something else and all of a sudden she was in Antarctica. Remember that?
Yeah, and I had that weird dream. It was like a shamanic journey. And it, so I was experiencing one thing and she was almost experiencing something like it. And I saw that, you know, that little cube and this giant structure over it and something about it. I don't remember now. It was not that long, but if it had to be contained or controlled or sent someplace, but there was something. It was a major, major source of energy. It was nothing. It wasn't anything to be, shouldn't be played with. Because I don't think anybody knows how to handle it.
Well, what if it's the thing that they need to make this dimensional CERN thing that some people think is really at the heart of Antarctica? What if that's the power source?
Well, one of the things is that if there's something coming out from under the ice that has that does not have the signature of being natural, it would support the inner Earth civilization. So many presenters on books have been written about it, that there's an inner Earth civilization. They claim that they have, you know, interstellar ships. So that would explain why something is coming from deep in the Earth, because the entries to the inner Earth are the poles, the natural entry. There are other entries that, which are man-made, but they're the natural entries are the poles. So that's why they keep on. I mean, they do so many things that it's almost like they're telling you, here, look here, which is a fact. If you go to Google Earth, which is supposedly composed of satellite photography, why do they gray out the North Pole? Why do they gray out the South Pole? You know, so many people are claiming that there is a giant opening in the North Pole, but yet when you look at a map, you know, it's always grayed out. You're like, don't look there. And I think you must have seen it. There's a video clip in YouTube. It looks like someone filmed it out of a viewport from either a capsule or a space station.
It was a space station. That was filmed from the space station, and there is definitely a hole.
There is an opening right there and there. And so if there's something coming out of the South Pole, the only difference between the North Pole and South Pole is that it just so happened that the North Pole is in the middle of under the ocean. So the water, you know, is following the pull of gravity and it's just bending in, following, you know, the pull of gravity. And that's why it's not flying off or anything like that. But in the South Pole, there is a solid continent there and miles of ice cap. So that's why you don't have this giant opening to look at, but still doesn't stop, you know, something inside the planet from emitting out. You know, neutrinos go through matter like it's not even there, so it doesn't matter how much covering there is there.
Right. I mean, they've got stories of people, you know, in small boats, ships, going north, and then suddenly they get up near the Antarctic area, and all of a sudden they're going south. Yeah. The compass. And it's like, I think that's why some people feel that there's a flat Earth, and it's something they feel, not even that it makes any sense in their head. They feel it, because if you think of it, well, it sort of is a flat Earth, because you think you're going straight. You don't realize that you've just made this huge turn, and now you're going down. You know, it would feel like a flat Earth. You just, but those. That concept of Antarctica versus the Arctic and the water versus the land. One of the things that I don't think that I, you know, and I'm supposing a lot of other people really appreciate is how big this land mass is. This is huge.
No, it's bigger than Australia. That should tell you something.
But we don't think of it that way for some reason. I'm wondering again, is it... the illusions of the maps, you know. But it's huge. It's huge. And all we know is that, yes, Jean had when she got out of body and she was looking at what she was looking at, there was, and she described it as some kind of a, I think she used the word device, but gave it in the image of a cube. But she wasn't, you know, more specific than, yeah, there's something there, and there's everybody, you know, even the watchers were there trying to put a cap on this thing. It's another one of those fascinating stories, Walter.
Yeah. And now we're hearing hubbub about it.
Now we're getting what?
But you heard it here first, folks.
Well,
we can get away with that, right? Because we said it first. But there's something weird that I'm going down there.
Well, we did it because of people who, because we keep getting more and more people that just sort of get introduced to us. And what happened was that we got introduced to the Gen, And the Jinn are the security guards for Gaia and the nature world. And when the dark side came in and took control, the first thing they did was take control of the security force. And they do it with ceremonial black magic, is the technical term you would probably hear. But it deals very much with just energy. It's control of energy. So anyway, Walt and I got introduced to them, and we realized what was happening, and all together we got together and we figured ways of counteracting the control that the dark side had over the Jinn, freeing the Jinn, so they weren't doing evil anymore. They were back to who they are, you know, the guardians of the planet. And then we realized, oh, we missed some Jinn. And we were doing a live show. Walt had just gone through, if we've missed any, please let them out. You know, we're going to get them all free. And that was when somebody, and I can't remember who it was, but one of our listeners in chat said, did you know about the Jinn being there guarding the Mecca, big black cube, the Kaaba, I think they call it. And
well,
so,
the Kaaba.
Okay, so they're protecting the Kaaba. And so when he said this to me, I did a remote view and ended up in the cube thingy. And yes, at the top of the top near where the roof is all these supposedly lanterns. I mean, when I first got there, I saw all these lanterns, and my focus was drawn to them. And then as I'm watching them, essentially, I had stepped back in the remote to the time where Walt was freeing them. So it was a remote, but it was a remote a little bit back, a few minutes into, you know, prior time. And when Walt, you know, frees them all of a sudden, these lanterns turned into Jinn, and they're hanging there. And one Jinn turned to another one and said, did that really happen? And all of a sudden, boom, they were all gone. You know, and so I report back, well, this just happened, and that's, you know, 5 days later, the Ark of Gabriel was supposedly discovered. I don't know that I believe in coincidence of that sort. I think that we inadvertently took the top off of that. We did it, Walter. We might have blown up the planet. We haven't gotten there yet.
No, I mean, Gaia is not an idiot, so that we'd never be allowed to even come close to that, so.
Oh, God. So we're pretty near the top of the hour here. I think we'll just put on a tune, and we'll see where we go when we get back. And what do you want to hear? Oh, let's just do Jessica Alisari Water.
Anything but Bing Crosby, please. I know you're a Bing Crosby groupie. But I don't hold it against you.
Perry Como, honey. If you want to know the truth, Perry Como.
The water, all I want is the sea, to feel that sunshine, that warm ocean breeze. I know life is good with a routine, but sometimes I need somewhere to be free. I will search until I find somewhere to calm my mind and feel all the goodbyes inside. Wash with the water, wash in the sea. Live by the water, live to be free. Heal with the water, just feel the peace. Let your mind wander and let it all be. Mm-hmm.
this earth is a privilege that some may not know. Don't take it for granted, 'cause we reap what we sow. We are so blessed to have what we have. Share good intentions and it'll all come back. I will search until I find somewhere to calm my mind and feel all the good vibes inside. Wash with the water, wash in the sea. Live by the water, live to be free. Heal with the water, just feel the peace. Let your mind wander and let it all be. All I want is the water, all I want is the sea. Feel that sunshine, somewhere to be free. Wash with the water, wash in the sea. Live by the water, live to be free. Heal with the water, just find the peace. Let your mind wander and let it all be. Let your mind wander and let it all be.
And welcome back to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show. This is Nancy Hopkins, and we're being produced by Cosmic Reality Radio. Excuse me. With me, it is October 9th, and with me, 2018, and with me is Walt Silva. So, what? Walter?
Can't hear you. Speak up, Sonny.
Oh, so, okay, so where we were going, what were we doing, what were we talking about?
Well, you were talking about we ended up talking about the stuff with the Antarctic, and you said something about transhumanism. So I don't know
what that does.
Yeah. What that stuff is about.
Well, you know that transhumanism thing. What happened? I talked about this earlier today. What happened was I was watching. Ancient Aliens had this supposed new show that went on for 4 hours. And I didn't realize that it was on. I just caught like an hour of it. And it was about transhumanism. Transhumanism being, as I understand it, taking a robotic, non-biological body and somehow putting up your thoughts into it and therefore living forever. But none of it makes any sense to me. What I found disturbing was people that I had a great deal of respect for saying it's inevitable. Linda Moulton Powell, Giorgio, whatever his last name is, the guy with the funny hair, William Henry, and some others that I don't know by name but certainly by face, all talking about the inevitability. If we're going to go into space, he wrote Holographic Universe. He's the Oriental kind of guy, very, very scientific. Talks kind of like this, you know. And he was talking about being able to put our consciousness into a laser beam and teleporting to other places in the solar system or the universe, and that's how we're going to explore the universe. It was so strange, Walt. I had to stop watching it. It was really unnerving me.
Well, you know, if that's what they want to believe, that's what they want to believe. But I can't let somebody feed me my thinking for me. It sounds like all those people have an agenda to support, or either they're invested in it, or they're being financed by people pushing for that agenda. Because otherwise, the more you are technologically dependent, the more you go backwards in your evolution. That's why all those, even Rumbala Melchizedek speaks of this, and when you read his thoughts and his philosophies and his books, he's more in alignment with Anastasia. Because what do you have there in those books? You have proof that she could travel the universe without a spaceship. If that's not advanced, I don't know what is. An entirely natural being with the capability to do this. But all those civilizations that rely on technology 100% of their lives, they're not moving forward, they're moving backwards. Because you are dependent on something that's manufactured. When nature is superior to any invention, we can assist nature by making things, but we can never replace it. So why do you think there's so many civilizations here wanting to know why man does what he can do? What happens is that, unfortunately, on this planet, how many thousands of years has it been since man has been allowed to be natural? You know, we're being psychologically controlled even before you're born.
Well, that
your
was
mother,
that
your mother is being controlled. You're being born to a controlled mother. So let me pose to you this argument. You know how so many people are so touched by this artificial intelligence concept. You know, artificial intelligence, they're going to control us and they're going to tell us what to do and they're going to take over our lives and blah, blah, blah. Well, let me pose to you this panorama, this scenario. If I'm standing in front of a person, the person is made of flesh and blood. If I hit them with a needle, yeah, I can make them bleed. If I stomp on their toe, they'll scream in pain. And I am talking to this person, and I cannot have a conversation with this person because all that comes out of this person's mouth is what has been written in a book, whether it be religious or scientific. I am sorry, I am dealing with an artificial intelligence because what this person is showing me is that their thinking has been fed to them and programmed in them. You're not made of circuits, you're not made of silicon, copper wires, processors, power supplies, but you're still a robot. You're an organic robot. So this concept of the artificial intelligence, people don't realize it's now. Every time you encounter a person who cannot produce or sustain or endure an original thought or concept, but has to, everything they say, everything they, every answer to every question is something that's been pre-programmed because they, in college, they taught me this and my parents taught me this and my priest taught me this. I'm sorry, you are an artificial intelligence because there's absolutely nothing natural about you. You're unable to process something you have never seen before. You can only entertain anything that has already been preconditioned in you. So we're already looking at artificial intelligence. The problem is that we can't identify it as such because we've been seeing it all our lives. And when you come across a free thinker, someone who thinks outside the box, well, they used to get burned and crucified. Now they're just tolerated.
That is damn creepy. I had never I think you'd have to be brain dead not to realize that people are brain dead. You know, that they're looking into these computer things all day long. Their phones. It's like the preoccupation with the social media. They don't in a car, you know. I remember when people liked to drive because when they would get into the car, the only time of the day they were by themselves, and if you wanted the radio, it was there, but you basically, it was the only time that you had to be within your own mind. And then cell phones came out. Never mind smart thingies. Cell phones. Yeah. And all of a sudden, I'm looking and I'm seeing more and more people that, you know, they're talking to somebody. And in the beginning, they were talking right into those phones. They had them phones up to their heads, remember?
Yeah.
And you see this change in the only time that they even had to pee by themselves. Now, none of them are alone. So they never
know. It's like the Borg Collective.
It is. I mean, it is scary.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have any time to think, and so they don't want to be by themselves. You know, they're terrified of sitting in a room with their own, and the only thing in their head are their own thoughts, because probably there's not much in there, except maybe replaying the last video game you did.
Now, take a look at whoever wrote that concept in the Star Trek series, wrote it into the script, was very observant and very savvy, because here's one of the things I noticed early on in the life of the series, when these characters were introduced. And if you remember, it came about in an episode with Q, when Q challenged Picard as to why the hell are you out here in space? And Picard says, oh, because we're ready to face any challenge. And then he put them face to face with the Borg, and they got kicked in the butt big time. But one of the things that got my attention about the whole Borg phenomena was, spiritually, they're dead, because they're incapable of producing anything new. It's like the difference between someone who lives by their creativity, whether it be a musician who lives by the music he composes, an artist who paints, someone carves, somebody designs furniture, people that make a living by the power of their creativity. Whether it comes from inspiration or it comes from need, there's a need to address this, and they come up with a creative solution, and that's their livelihood. Compare that to someone who lives by stealing. They steal 1,000, that's not enough. They have to steal 2,000. That's not enough. They have to steal 3,000, because they're not creating anything. They're taking what's not theirs, that's sitting there, that someone else created, and it's never enough. So when you look at the Borg, it's almost the same comparison, is that they have to go around the universe absorbing existing civilizations, because they themselves are stagnant. There's no soul, there's no creativity, there's absolute complete disconnection from source. So they're incapable of conceiving something other than what they are. So evolutionary speaking, they're stuck. They're like dead alive. It's like being buried alive. There's no place to go. So what do? Well, you roam around the universe absorbing civilizations that are living and alive and connected to source, that are capable of creating and conceiving new things, because they essentially are living dead. And if you notice, that's another interesting feature, is that once somebody gets assimilated, their flesh looks like they're living dead. You know, it's gray and mottled, and they look more dead than alive. Well, that's essentially what it is. It's like zombies from space.
It's very creepy. Well, you know, when I was a diehard Star Trek fan. I saw everything, but when they started getting into the Borg stories, I couldn't watch it. I stopped watching it until they got over the Borg things. I found it very disturbing. And I think it's the more I see of whatever is happening out there, the more I'm convinced that, you know, when they had the war in heaven between God and Lucifer, that Lucifer is an AI. Lucifer is non-biological. And God created these biological entities, and Lucifer goes, you know, I can build something better. And if I build it better, they'll all come to me. They'll give up your flimsy little biological entities in order to be these robotic things that live forever. And the loss here is that, oh, well, yeah, you could choose that, but when you choose that, you choose to not have a soul. And
there's no evolution for you. You're just inside a fishbowl. Imagine spending eternity swimming around the fishbowl. That's exactly what you have just achieved.
Are you saying I'm torturing my fish?
No.
It's a big bowl. No, it is crazy. I mean, I just can't get my head into this at all. I mean, they've now got sex robots that they're trying, and the guy is creepy. You know, this guy that's the inventor of these sex dolls, you know, it's like, oh, we can do this. We, I mean, gosh, creepy.
Well, look at the intended purpose behind all of it, to separate you from the natural part of you, to separate you from the true powers that you have as a natural human being, accentuate the seductive side of technology as opposed to the almost unlimited powers you have as a human being, because that's another beauty of this ingrained conditioning from earliest youth. Tell me, because you were an avid Christian, were you? Because I remember you telling me you were going to church, but I don't remember if you were Christian or Catholic or what you were.
Catholic.
Okay. That I know because I come from a Catholic-controlled country. But what school or church or lodge or any form of human organization teaches you how incredibly powerful you are and how amazing you are and how you can achieve? No, they start off by telling you how you have little worth and you're
original sin.
Okay, so right from the beginning you are not shown how amazing you are. You're quite the opposite. I mean, in fact, it gets so bad, it's like you wonder, why am I alive? You know, who benefits from my being alive? So take it from there, and then it goes downhill from there, because everything powerful and fantastic and wonderful is outside of you. You don't have any value. There's nothing you. Creation doesn't get any benefit from you breathing air on it. And it's all just bullshit. It's just propaganda that you buy into because you don't know anything else. It's like a bird that is born in a cage. You open the cage and it doesn't do anything. It doesn't know any other existence but that being, and you let the poor creature fly, chances are it'll get killed first chance because it's never met a cat, never met a predator, doesn't know how to forage for food by itself. It's been disconnected from nature forever. So the poor creature has a very slim chances of survival by itself in the wild. And that's a modern human. Incapable of surviving in this universe because it's been divorced from its powers. No, I mean, tell me, what school do you go to that teaches you how powerful you are? They don't even teach you human design so that you can function
the school,
correctly as a natural human being.
The school of cosmic reality. We teach this. Didn't I give you a degree of it? Doctor of... Oh, doctor of venerology. That's what I did. I gave you a diploma.
360 degrees of knowledge, huh?
Well, you know,
that's starting from that, from a disempowered, useless, you know, powerless, impotent human, and you show them, oh, look, you put this consciousness in this, and this is fantastic because machines are amazing, and of course I'm going to buy into it because I'm this powerless, impotent little human, and with this, I can become amazing. I can live forever, and the rest is just lies.
But you know, the tragedy here is that they're willing to. I mean, some of the people that I respect apparently are willing to think in terms of the inevitability that we will integrate machines and the consciousness of human beings. And, you know,
I laugh when I hear that word because there's this lady who wrote these cosmic reality rules. And like, she says that the future is something that you can only create. So what inevitable future are you talking about, people? You know, so right then and there, that smacks of propaganda when you talk in those terms. Oh, it's inevitable.
It absolutely. I mean, and that's why I found the whole presentation. Okay, I've been saying for now since 2016 when Hillary and Trump started to do their election thingy, and I'm going like, wait a minute. It feels like we are in some kind of a very, very bizarre old comic book, because the people that were running for office were characters of very peculiar personalities. You know, I mean, you got Hillary on one side who, you know, is a lot of questionable things. I mean, the 200 people that have died in her area, you know, makes you wonder about it. The very essence of the campaign, the way that they were act, everything took on a comic kind of character of, this is not real. And as it just keeps getting more and more unreal to the point that now, and they're pushing this scenario of AI, like big time. I know you don't watch TV, but I'll tell you, there's a lot of commercials out there regarding AI. And oh, it's so wonderful. It's just gonna bring, what is the matter? We gotta wake these people up. Seriously, because they're gonna just drive us right off the cliff. Or maybe we should
because people invested in that scenario, their level of consciousness. I'm not trying to be here end times, left behind. No, none of that religious stuff. But I do agree with Dr. Costa because I've seen it in people that between 2003 and 2005 is when I attended his lectures, when he would come around and he would be teaching the 15-step process, and he would speak, and he predicted quite accurately everything that's happening now. He predicted way back then how people would get sick out of nowhere, because as the planet keeps going up and up and up in vibrations, in Eliasis, that she came to help raise the vibration of the planet, all those old thought forms, all of these old agendas and traumas and things that were never properly addressed are going to make you sick. And he says people are going to get killed with cancer treatments and they don't have any cancer because they're being completely misdiagnosed. And that was his purpose behind teaching the 15-step process, so you could access your guides and address all these past life traumas, so you can get rid of this negative energy baggage and be able to move forward with the planet. Because he said something that's, I heard him say it first before reading it in the Law of One. He says, this is the first time that the planet is ascending with all the population on top of it. In the past, there's been mass extinctions where the planet was practically devoid of life before it made a dimensional ascension. He says, now this time all the population is on it and it wants to carry its population with it. But you have to make yourself compatible to that energy. So you can't mix the old with the new. It doesn't work. It's like trying to put, I don't know, SSD memory stick in an old XT computer. It's not compatible. The one thing doesn't plug into the other. And I don't care how advanced they are, these people and their technology, but they're still very backwards spiritually and mentally in that sense, finding evolution in something artificial. So that in and of itself makes their energy of their consciousness, their awareness, incompatible with where the Earth is going. It is incompatible. It's one of those things that are there to put the brakes on what's supposed to happen. It's another what do they call it? A wrench, when somebody throws a wrench in the works. It's something else. Like, for example, do a mental list. They put fluoride in the water, you know, poisons in the food. All these things, when you don't take them individually, but take them collectively, and they're meant to do one thing: slow down the ascent of consciousness and the vibration that's increasing in the planet. Even Dr. Costa said it about the chemtrails. So many people say, yeah, they're using chemtrails to poison the earth and to do this and to do this. And when he was asked point blank, what was the purpose of the chemtrails? He said it quite matter of fact. He didn't even react. He goes, oh, it's to block the sun, the light of the sun, because the sun is accelerating mankind's evolution. So that's why they want to block it. They want to reduce sunlight as much as possible in order to slow down this process. So So this thing, this transhuman thing, is another one of these little distractions, or, you know, another thing to add to the pot of things to slow down humanity. Because you know about creating your own reality. You know about the power of consciousness. And the cabal has been using our consciousness to support the reality they want for thousands of years, right? Well, how different is this? They're trying to milk our consciousness to manifest some crap which is called transhumanism. So the more people we can get to pour their consciousness and their attention into this, the more chances that this machine will take off. And that's all it is, consciousness milking. Oh, inevitability. Oh, yes. I'm going to buy that car right now.
But what I'm saying to you is a couple of things here. First off, it was a massive number, comparatively, of people that are highly respected going that place. All right? It's like these people, the people that I thought would never go there are all of a sudden telling the same story. And that is disconcerting. All right? But the other thing about it is the concept of consciousness. All right? Now, it doesn't even... This idea that you're going to be able to upload your consciousness into a machine doesn't make scientific, doesn't comply with the scientific knowledge that they have regarding consciousness. And it was, I'm not going to remember, am I going to remember his name? What's his name? He was an anesthesiologist who kept putting people into a state of death, essentially drug death, and then bringing them back. And he became fascinated with the whole concept of where is this consciousness while I've got them in a physical state of death. And he got with a quantum physicist, and together they began to marry up the concept of enterology, the study of energy, with the study of what is chemically happening in the 3D body when it dies. And lo and behold, they make this present this concept that consciousness is actually being stored in the cells themselves. And again, I should have gone back on the notes because this stuff is not sticking in my head, but it's like the structure of a cell, and it's got a technical name to it. Microtubular, I think they're calling it. But you've got this area of the cells that are actually storing energy, which comprises consciousness. Now, if you don't have a biological representation, I mean, of this connection, and you know it's got to be biological because it's an energy that would only work with biology, not with some kind of a mechanical thing.
But I'm not seeing consciousness there. I'm seeing the interface for consciousness. Like, for example, for you to... connect a computer to a network, you need an interface, whether it's wireless or wired. What you're describing to me is the interface for that, not in it of itself. Because when the body is no longer, you still continue, you exist. So, and also these men are not taking into account that the body is harboring two souls, the animal soul and the high soul. So yeah, the animal soul needs that interface so that the animal consciousness can make the body function. And the high soul is inhabiting the body, but it's not responsible for all the autonomous functions. I mean, you don't tell your stomach, in fact, you wouldn't even know how to tell your stomach how to digest something. You just ate a sandwich, it has to be digested. Do you give your stomach instructions to do that? No, but it knows how to do it. Where is that knowing coming from? All of that is being controlled by what the Hawaiians call the unihipili, the low soul, which the highest chakra is the solar plexus chakra. So did these men take all of this into their equations?
Oddly enough, Walt, they came at the. I heard him talk, Hoffman. No, it was not Hoffman. Oh, gosh, the name is right getting there. What they were doing based on Dietrich Decker, what's his name?
Deepak Chopra?
Yes, he was the one that was interviewing this anesthesiologist. And the anesthesiologist was doing it, he went at it from the aspect of what happens to consciousness? Where does it go while I've got this dead body here? You see, that was where he came from. He believed in the soul, in the consciousness, whether he's talking about it or not. This energy field, you know, that's kind of like more than we are as a physical body. And with the quantum physicist, understanding the quantum field and the interconnection of energies at that level, that's how they got back to realizing that there was a specific structure within the cells that was holding a particular frequency. It's almost like a little computer that's like a memory stick, okay? Well, every cell's got a memory stick. And so it was, and chemically they said, if this is true, there's going to be this and this and this. And they put out a number of, let's say, wait a minute. My friend Derek, our friend, doesn't realize we're doing radio, apparently.
Bring him into the show.
No, he's he's about to do the test with the glyphosate tester. He got the kit that tests the Roundup in the honey.
I'm thinking he's not going to find anything because that went up into the satellite antenna a week ago.
We know there's not going to be anything in it. We know. That's what we're trying to prove, because everybody else's honey, 98% of the honey tested by the FDA, has got the dang stuff in it, to the point that they no longer will test for it because it's always there. And they don't want people to know how bad it is, and that's why they raised their prices from $100 to test it to $1,000 to test it. Now this company came out and they've got these strips. I actually found out about the strips a while back, but now they're being made available. And so he was able to go online and order these test strips that will test for Roundup, the glyphosate. And so this is really exciting, and he's going to film it. So this is good. He just doesn't remember that we're having a radio show. Ever since he left the prison, he doesn't listen to us because he's not up all night bored. Now he's running. He was running anyway, but now he doesn't have to stay up all night and play prison guard. What a change. I mean, if you want to talk about somebody manifesting a new reality, Derek did that like I've never seen anybody do it. I could get into it, but we're not going there. So what we've got happening is that they set up a bunch of criteria saying that if they were right about this theory, then you should be able to find this, this, and this in it, like we do, you know. If we're right about what we're talking about with shungite, you should not find any chemical in any of the shungite bee honeys. It's just not possible. If we're right about what we're saying, it's not possible there's anything toxic in these things. And so since that particular philosophy or concept was presented, they have gone and checked the criteria, and they have confirmed it, that there does seem to be a energetic response exactly where they said it would be if the consciousness... Walt just asked me to marry him. Did you just ask Dolly?
I'm praising her because she says, so then how is it going to be captured to put it somewhere else? And I said, oh, I love the way Dolly thinks.
I don't know, but it's just one of those very strange, freaky things that, again...
But they're still looking at creation from the bottom up. They don't realize that creation comes from the top down. So, sorry. There's a lot of hit and miss, and they're still... Instead of connecting to intelligent infinity and just getting all that information, they're just bungling around in the dark.
I think it comes back to that question of free will, and you're being presented a theory. And if you don't dispute the theory, then we're going to assume that you're okay with it, and we're going to do it. All right? Whatever is happening, maybe these people are being taken over, and all of a sudden they're saying something that if they were awake and in control of themselves, they never would have. But there is
I got to pause you right there. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be impolite by interrupting you, but I really need to insert something in exactly this point that you just made. And this was brought up by Corey Good in one of his lectures, where when they spoke about that AI virus that supposedly comes from another world or some other reality. And he says that all these scientists that are pushing for the transhumanist agenda are actually being controlled by this AI virus that's affecting their thinking. So when they've been taken out of the planet to show them the information that what you're doing, you're being manipulated in order to do this, and you're being affected by this energy virus that's affecting your thinking ability, and they have a technology to clear them of this virus, and then they get it, and then they come back to Earth and they get contaminated again, and they go back to the usual agenda. I'm kind of surprised that these guys haven't come up with some way to vaccinate the scientists from being afflicted by this virus, but I couldn't care less anyway. But that's exactly what's going on. Their thinking is being taken over. It's being herded.
But they open the door, Walter. Open the door. Those scientists say, well, I don't know if it's such a bad idea. Boom!
Yeah.
It's like as we get higher in frequency, as our consciousness begins to become more aware, as we are accessing more and more information, and don't tell me a computer can think faster than I can.
No.
I mean, you know, they keep telling people that the computer is going to think. I'm sorry, a robot sitting there might be able to regurgitate what it knows. But to imagine and think and create, no, it's not going to happen. Are they going to ever be able to think beyond the box? No, never going to happen.
It's a useful tool. That's about it.
That's it. Now we play with the Archon, and they're kind of a different group. And I know that people think that the Archon are this, and I'm telling you, it's something else. But the Archon came out of Atlantis. And it was a combination of the biological thinking process. It wasn't strictly a mechanical thing. They were trying to capture the essence of human thought and then give it a program and let it go. But it was detached. It was human thought, but it was detached from a human consciousness that can think outside the box and manipulate.
Remind you of anything?
Yes.
We're watching the same movie all over again.
All over again.
Expecting a different, what is it? The Einstein's definition of insanity, repeating the same action over and over again and expecting different results. This is what we're looking at.
Now, just to kind of round out this concept, because we've been talking about the transhumanism, and let's talk about Anastasia again. Because interestingly enough, I don't know if you've been seeing it, people are falling into the Anastasi YouTubes that we put up last year.
Oh.
You know, I'd been introduced to her many times, and every time I was like, nah. You know, and then all of a sudden it was, oh, yes. And that's when we read the books and we did radio shows one after the other on each of the books, except the last couple. When we did that, I thought, wow. There's a lot of people following Anastasia. We're going to have a YouTube radio shows that are really going to take off. And instead, they sat there, bleh, nothing. And then now, all of a sudden, people are starting to listen to them and get the books and read the books. Okay, so as a shout-out to those people that, you know, are really starting to engage in the Anastasia story, and because you know it as well as you do, just kind of like relate it to those people that may not understand that this is trending and maybe you want to get on board with it. You understand what I'm asking you?
Mm. Yes.
Okay.
The seed thought. You start bringing that, you're bringing that into the collective. You started this thing and now It's what lets people, it's like when Dr. Costa explained the thing with the 15-step process. The first time he did it, it took a lot of time and effort to achieve it, but then it became part of the collective. So the people that came afterwards were able to get to that state very easily because it was already part of the collective thing, the collective consciousness. So now we're talking about Anastasia. We're introducing her concepts. I mean, I never stop working. I mean, there's not a single day that goes by that I forget or stop thinking about all the information that's there. And I'll give you an example. You know that for some time now, I've worked with the energy balancing by number systems that Lloyd Meir developed. And it really does work. Like, for example, a gentleman wrote to me asking me, you know, which of my devices would help him. And he's describing that he's got this condition and he's got one of the conditions is a glaucoma. So I said, all I can offer is that douse you and see if there are numbers for your condition. So I did do the dowsing and I did get a long number. And I said, according to my dowsing, it'll be 7 days before you perceive any change. So he went ahead and he did the numbers. And I think something like 2 weeks later, he went back to the doctor, and the doctor like kept shaking his head. He did not understand how the man now has no glaucoma in his eye. He just wouldn't fit into the doctor's mind. How could this be possible? So then he asked me about another condition, and I doused another number, but this one's going to take longer for him to perceive a change. So I've been working with that every single day, and I'm rereading the Anastasia books. Because I want to capture any nugget or anything that I may have not noticed in my first pass. And for example, in the first book, I'm reading in the chapter when there's an experience where Anastasia sits down on the ground and asks Vladimir to sit with his back to her. So he's leaning against her and she's putting her arms around his shoulders and she asks him to be quiet. And then all of a sudden, he notices the environment around him begins to change. And he starts feeling happier and happier and happier. And he says, I felt so happy. I could have sworn that my mother was there with him. And Anastasia explains that what she's doing is she's synchronizing her heart rhythm to his heart rhythm. And in doing so, she's acting like a bridge for him to feel all the vegetation, all the fauna and all the flora around him, because where she lives, which is her space of love, all the fauna and all the flora are entirely aware of her energy and her heart. That's why they respond to her so naturally. She doesn't have to think about eating. She snaps her fingers and squirrels will come and give her food, because everything, every plant, every animal, despite of size, is aware of her, is aware of her energy, is aware of her heart rhythm. And she was able to sustain that for a few minutes for him. And in fact, he couldn't believe how empty he felt when the experience ceased. And he asked her to do it again, and she says, I can only do it for a very short time because my heart has its own natural rhythm. So then I thought long and hard of it, and it took me like 2 weeks to sit down and douse the question, if there is a number that will do that. Since I live in my space, in my property, and this is my space, my place, is there a number that will let all the fauna and all the flora in my property become aware of my energies and my heart? And I got yes, so I doused and requested the number. And as soon as I installed it, I can't explain the change. The change is like a complete state of utter peace came over me. It's not like being drunk or anything or being high or anything like that. It was just like, this is home. This is real, true home, and I've been here forever. I've been in this property for 100 years. Everything just felt amazing, you know, being connected to everything, you know, all the animals, all the insects. I mean, I'm working in the shop, and the little birds are coming into the shop, you know, to pick the seeds that fall and might bounce inside the shop. And it's like they've known me all their lives. And I go and of them go and come back, and these are wild birds, and yet they don't fly away scared. Whereas before, the tiniest movement and everybody just flies off in a panic. Now they're just there on top of me, and I'm getting out of the way so as not to bother them. So there's this complete transformation to your space.
And were you, did you become aware of your heart?
Yeah.
You could feel your heart and the connectedness to everything, correct?
Yeah. So to me, the books are a treasure trove of infinite information. All you have to do is be aware and have your eyes open and notice. And I just pick the crumbs, and they're like so valuable because you can take one and there's a stake off and there's no end to what you can achieve. You just be open to what's there, and that has to do with my personality. I want to learn things that I can use. I don't have time or patience to fill my head with endless trivia. If you're going to give me a book, a YouTube, it has to be something like the Dan Winter that Libor sent me. It was so useful. I got all this information from it. So,
for those people that don't understand what we're talking about, Anastasia is a book that was written by Vladimir, what's his last name?
Vladimir Megre.
Megre.
M-E-G-R-E.
And
it's a French last name.
Yeah. And she lives up in the tundra in Siberia, northern Russia, northwest central Russia, east central Russia. And it's his interaction with her, telling her story. And it's just fascinating. The first book is the one that I suggest that you don't go on to the second one until you really come to grips with the first one. Because each book is going to change drastically. Correct, Walt? I mean, from book to book, they were very different. And the first one is the one where you truly feel the essence of Anastasia, who I think of as a human form of an aspect of Gaia herself, because she is just absolutely one with nature. And he writes a book about what he sees her do and the magic that she introduces him to. And as the story goes on, I mean, he, to be honest with you, he's kind of a jerky kind of character in the book.
Well, he's a typical example of a technological human. Someone who's grown up with technology and has no understanding of what it is to be natural, because you're looking at a 100% natural human, natural born, natural raised. Her body is not filled with the drugs. So, here in his mind, he finds it difficult to reconcile the fact here is a person devoid of the need of technology, yet is more knowledgeable, more intuitive, greater understanding, greater capacity for everything than people that are completely immersed in technology. She was superior to him in every way. And here she's completely devoid. He thought that she would be like ignorant of his world and his life. No, she knew more stuff about the modern world than he did.
And history.
History.
Yeah, as you go through the books, she unravels history. And that's where we were introduced to the Bedrus people. Now, I'm a Russian historian out of college. I was trained in this stuff, right? And all of a sudden, we're like reading the book, and I'm going like, wait a minute, where did these people come from? And then it occurred to me that in all of my studies of the Russian people, you don't go very deep into their history. There is no native Russian that you ever are introduced to, because that was the Bedrus people, incredibly magical people. And that story in and of itself, you know, well, tell it, Walt. You got 10 minutes.
Huh?
Do you remember?
Well, the truth is that their history was destroyed because they represent true free humans, unconditioned humans. And there was an agenda by six individuals who thought that they were better than everybody else to take over humanity and control humanity. So, number one, these people were connected to the earth. I mean, they dialogued with God the same way that you would dialogue with anybody in your life. It was a common thing to them. They had no need for religion. I mean, if you can talk to the essence of your creator, then why? What do you want a religion for? What do you want a church for? These people did not believe, were not concerned with death, because they absolutely accepted the truth that it's immortal life in nature. They absolutely understood that even before the time would come for them to discard their physical body, they were already planning where they were going to be born and what they were going to be doing, because they understood that there's eternal life in nature. So it didn't concern them at all. Given their style of life, they lived for hundreds of years. They didn't live a measly 80, 90 years. But the key to their success is their complete and utter communion with the earth, even from their birth. When a child is born, a tree is planted, and that water, that birth water, because that's another thing, is that Belarusian females, they give birth in the water, in a tub. And that water and the placenta, everything, that water got poured into the tree, the placenta gets buried at the foot of the tree. So that tree is growing up with the child, and they are totally connected. So that means that all the fruit that that tree is going to give will have all the ingredients and all the elements that your body needs to live a long life, a long, healthy life. That's how close they were married to everything, and they needed nothing. And like she repeats throughout all the books, man has created nothing superior to nature, and that holds true. Sorry, I have not seen, you know, it's horrible how the human body is treated like a machine, where they'll go and, oh, they treat this with surgery and that with surgery. Oh, we'll change this. Why not fix what's wrong? Why do you need to be cutting off parts? Well, they don't know how to fix it, because the body is a machine. It's not a living thing. Like this woman in New York, she was going to get an operation because she had diverticulitis. And I said, you don't need to have pieces of your intestine cut off. Just go do a colonic wash. That will, and she says, yeah, but if the colonic wash takes out the particles that are embedded in the intestine, that's going to leave like a little bag. And I said, yeah, but your intestine is alive, because I think you're alive. Therefore, the tissue will recover itself. It just needs that crap removed from your body. No, it was easier to go to the doctor and just cut you up. So, so you see, that's how far back we've fallen. And their history has been buried.
Okay, let's just tell people what happened to them, because you have this lovely little group, and then you have something happened to the society. What was that?
They were separated from their land. They were thrown away from their land, because that was the core of their existence, is their lab, of their sacred space, their space of love. When people would come together, they came together for love, to create a space of love. So where you are, where you are living, everything that's surrounding you is loving you. The plants, the animals, the air, the earth. Again, the earth is a living being. So they started by separating you from the land. That's why people are all squeezed together, and you have 100 families living in a building, disconnected from the earth, disconnected from the land. And that's how you little by little, you are made powerless. Welcome to the 21st century.
I know, it's anyway, the Anastasi. Now, the Bedrus, what I wanted you to say, talk about, was the fact that how they got separated from their land wasn't that they were divorced from the land. What happened was they were sold a bill of goods that said that they didn't communicate directly with God. They had to go through the priest to do it. Was that correct?
Yeah, at the beginning, they started laughing at the priests on the concepts that they were bringing to them, because it made no sense. But then they realized they had to be more forceful. So that's when they introduced the concept of the princes, a prince, because there was no royalty. There's no such thing. And that's one of the things that Maigret found in his investigations. in the old Russian civilization, there was no royalty. There were no princes. All of the princesses that are registered in Russian history are foreigners. So that the book goes into great depth explaining how that evolved. Another thing that the books explain is the invention of salaries, how that was a tool of slavery. Only the beauty of salary is that you are a willing slave. You don't know that you're a slave, but you're a willing slave because you're being paid. That was a fun chapter, wasn't it?
Well, what became so very fascinating was how we're talking about a people that have been essentially not on the planet for, 1,000 years or more. And yet the very foundation of who they were is where we've got to get to in order to take the next leap in evolution for the planet and ourselves. And the same structure that took them down is the structure that we have to take down right now. You know, who's the kings and queens? Well, they're the Obamas and the Clintons and, you know, these other people who take this leadership positions. I mean, come on, do you think the founding fathers ever considered families that would, the father, then the son, and then the husband and the wife? Do you think that anybody would have ever conceived of this at that time? This is another manipulation of control to create royalty. And yeah. What do we want to do? We want to take them and put them before a military tribunal and try them for crimes against humanity and being traitors to the United States. And I can't tell you how I hope it happens quickly. It's like, because once the shock comes, Walt, once because what these people have done can be absolutely proven. And those people that are in denial can only deny for so long. You know, it's that rule, somebody's rule, you know, that when a new concept is presented, everybody laughs at it. And then, you know, then there's some other middle point. And then the third one is, and then everybody doesn't know why everybody didn't always believe in it.
Well, the thing is, I think the biggest shock for anyone at this point is discovering that we are not just one single humanity. What we believe is humanity is actually made up of two different species, you know, normal, regular humans and predators. Because no way do these people see themselves as humans. No way. I mean, when they consider that it's perfectly normal and natural and they have a birthright to prey on human children and babies, I'm sorry, but there's no way that you can believe that you yourself are human. You must believe in your belief system that you're some other kind of entity far superior to humans, and I have a right to do this. Like the hunter that goes out, I have a right to kill animals because I'm hungry, or I want a trophy for my wall. Well, because in order for you to do that with a clear conscience, you have to accept the fact that you are a superior life form than a deer, because the deer cannot wear clothes, cannot talk, cannot use utensils. Therefore, I must be superior. So yes, I want a trophy for my wall. I'm going to kill that deer. Well, that's the attitude that these people are showing. In fact, they're offended that they're going to be tried. They're not saying, "Oh, I wish I hadn't committed these crimes. I'm going to be tried because I." No, that's not their attitude. You can see that in the articles coming out. They're offended. They're outraged that they're going to be tried for something that's totally natural for them. I have a right to self-expression, don't I? So what if I like to eat babies when they're still alive? So yeah. It's my self-expression. I have a right to self-expression.
I had somebody recently said to me, I'm being called a thief and a liar. I said, you are a thief and a liar. You know, I mean, it's like these people, I don't know how they think that they can get away with this and it's justifiable, but they certainly do. And, you know, it's like they'll probably all go to prison and think that they're innocent and that we've done some bad thing to them. It's like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
anyway.
You can deny it all you want, but, you know, the truth of what you are is there, whether you accept it or not. Well, that's the dichotomy and where you are and the place that you are.
But the Vedrus are, you know, still alive and well. I think that they, because they disappeared in mass. And my feeling is that these were very magical people who just sort of like went someplace to wait out time and now we're coming back because, well, we told you this was a screwy idea. Let's help you get back to where we were. I think that they're...
And one of the things, if you notice, because sometimes people read what they want to read or they understand what they want to understand, never in any of the books, even though Anastasia openly describes the bad things that are fruit of technology, she uses the word, remember, this has been translated from another language. The word that's used is technocracy, the power of technology, and how degrading it is to the quality of life. Well, we're no strangers to that because we are working to address the EMF issue. So are we in agreement with that? Yes, we are in agreement. But one of the things she never does in any of the books is speak openly against the use of any technology. On the contrary, she says we should use what we know to do things better, to fix things. She doesn't go, it's not like, remember the novel Fahrenheit 451, where they go around burning all the books? No, that's not the point. The point she's saying is that since we have this capacity for making things, okay, let's make them the right way, the positive way.
It's a matter of decision. And, you know, somewhere along the line, we gave up our right of deciding. And that's what I think the change is now. And I'm deciding to end the show because we're 3 minutes over. Listen, I love you very much. I love the audience. We thank you, the humans, the etherics, the galactics, whoever is out there listening to us. We so appreciate your support. And we hope that... that we're bringing the old knowledge back so that we can all get back to what we were doing, which was living life in a pure and loving way. How did you put it, Walter, that you were...
What?
When you were talking about being connected to everything.
To let the all the fauna and my, right. What I... Because one of the things I have to douse before I can even douse for the number... is the expression of what I'm dowsing for, because otherwise you get the wrong thing. So I ask for a number that would make all the fauna and all the flora in my space aware of my energies and my heart. That's what I requested. So that way, that's how you connect, because now they're aware of you. And that, I guess that's why can you believe it? I have to make myself another pendulum this afternoon because the squirrels stole my pendulum.
A squirrel stole your pendulum?
Yes.
Oh my God! How funny! See, you had to say, okay, it's all right that we start to interact at a different level, right? The first thing you got is a wizard kind of squirrel that needed a pendulum, so they borrowed yours, maybe forever, because they know you can make more. Because why? Because you're a human being and you're not a robot.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody. We're going to say goodnight and
good night, everyone.
We'll see you next time. Thanks, Walt. It was fun.
Thank you for listening to the Cosmic Reality Radio Show, produced by Haggy Shack Radio and simulcast over Cosmic Reality Radio. Hello.